Spoken word.
A taste of Melbourne's diverse poetry scene.
Poets using their voices to entertain, to move, to take you on a journey.
Connecting you to grassroots poetry and performance.
Welcome to 3CR Spoken Word Show. My name is Indrani Pereira, and I'm broadcasting from the lands of the Wurundjeri people of the Kulin Nation, stolen land. We pay our respects to elders past and present, always was and always will be Aboriginal land. Spoken word and poetry come from the heart and touch on all the topics peculiar to the human condition. As such, there may be content in this show that could cause distress. Please practice self-care when listening and speak to someone if you need to. For the next half an hour, I'm going to be interviewing Hayley Ricketson. Hayley Ricketson is a poet, playwright, and probably writes most from the impetus that the personal is political and the political is personal. She discovered spoken word poetry when living in London and has been a slam finalist in London and Melbourne and is currently lucky enough to be part of a Melbourne Slam-a-Lama Ding Dong poetry team. Playwriting is her love language, but overall she loves creative writing and expression in all its forms, particularly when it's communicating something honest, human, and maybe a bit funny. Welcome to the show, Hayley.
Thank you. Thanks so much, Indrani. Lovely to be here.
It's so nice to have you in the studio. And with your bio, you're talking about how the personal is political and the political is personal. And I'm wondering if you could tell us a little bit about what that means to you.
Yeah, sure. I guess that phrase, the personal is political, has always resonated with me and certainly resonated in the kinds of writing that I'm drawn to, where sort of our own experiences can kind of be reflected in these bigger political spheres and these sort of, you know, you can kind of see how everything inside you is also reflected back in the ways that people interact with each other, your interpersonal relationships and bigger things. And so it kind of then made sense to do it the other way around, like the political is personal. And I think that that's come up for me a lot over the last few years, maybe because our political world has gotten so intense and jarring in so many ways, and there's a lot of that can, you know, really hit you internally. And I think kind of acknowledging that helps me in one way to kind of just manage the chaos around me, to kind of make those, the way that the political can affect you, feel like, to validate it in a way, maybe.
And I think that's an interesting thing to say, because it's pretty easy to get disengaged, I feel, now with politics, because it's getting so extreme. And I don't know, you can kind of feel powerless, right? What could I possibly do? How can I have any impact?
Absolutely.
But if you start thinking that there's this personal element to it, then I feel it might be a bit more empowering.
Yeah, I would agree with that. And I think it gives you some control in terms of how you're interacting with it and how you want to go about sort of stepping into your role in it, or whatever you want that to be. Or, and it also can help to sort of let you go, okay, today there's too much and today I need to step back and today I need to sit down. But I think there's also an element of all that chaos, all that intensity, it feels like it's all kind of all around you but still separate from you. And so sometimes it also helps in that sort of framing of it, the political is personal, to sort of put yourself back in the world and understand your role in it. I feel like I'm talking a lot of abstracts, but hopefully it makes some sense.
No, that's okay. I think it's very interesting, and it feels a good time to talk about this kind of stuff, you know? And I'm wondering, for you, was there a particular thing that led you to feel like this?
Sorry, to feel like?
The political is personal and the personal is political, or is it something that has always been a sensibility that you've had?
I think it's always been there, to a degree, and I wish I could think of an example, because I guess a lot of the writing or the art that I've ended up resonating with is, you know, personal stories or human stories, but that still sit within a broader context or kind of just touch on those. I wonder if I can rephrase this. Like, I don't think everything needs to be an individual story, but I do think that there's ways to kind of exemplify a broader socio-political context or a cultural context and kind of get at that human personal element to it, and also kind of understand that those two things are always in dialogue with one another. They're always, you know, you're always being informed by what's around you and you're informing what's around you as well. And so I think that's sort of maybe come up a lot as well in the last few years, because you start to really, there are a lot of things happening in the world that I, like lots of people, feel very passionate about. And it cuts into you, you know, you kind of sit there with this weight of it all and that sort of hopelessness of what can I really do? How can I change this? And, or how can I just help in some way? And yeah, I think you also then see and start and have to kind of appreciate how everyone is reacting to it differently in their own personal way. And that, you know, sometimes the way people react to things you might not agree with, sometimes their beliefs around it you might not agree with, and you still have to kind of hold that, yeah, but we're all just here existing together and we're all navigating the same world in a sense. So, yeah, it's a funny thing to try and hold all of that. And I think coming back to that, like, personal is political, political is personal, is just a bit of an anchor that, yeah, hopefully helps me make sense of it.
It's a nice reminder too what you're talking about, I feel, in the sense that when you think about politics, it's all just people who are part of that political process, right? And it's easy to put it out there and it's some kind of thing that's separate from us, but it's not. It's, we've created politics. It's people who are involved in politics. So, of course, it's going to be personal, right?
Absolutely. Yeah. And it can as well feel very, it's easy to feel powerless when, you know, it feels as if politicians, people with money, people with power are running everything. I guess they are to a degree. But yeah, there's that sense of we are still here and part of it and can inform it the way, I don't know, any way we can, let me try and say that again. I guess we can make a place for ourselves in it, and that's still important to do. And also, yeah, I mean, it all gets a bit, can make your head explode, but appreciating politicians are humans and not to kind of excuse any of the things, you know, some of the things they do or don't do, but that sense of they're responding to certain things around them, they're responding to people, they're responding to media, or they're and it's sort of, yeah, they're not an institution, they are and they aren't. And so they're also, it's a weird thing to kind of try and really sit with.
Yes.
In that sense.
Yes, it is. And it sounds like you think about these things a lot and that you're considered. And rather than having a knee-jerk reaction, maybe you do, I don't know, but then you sort of sit down and go, what's going on? And, you know, how am I going to look at this? And trying to at least realise that, yes, there's people at the base of it all, right?
Yes. Yeah, it is what I try to do. I definitely have a lot of reactions. I listen to a fair bit of AM radio in the mornings and everything, and I'll have plenty of moments screaming at a Bluetooth speaker, depending on what's being said. And I think that's fine to do. And then, yeah, it's nice to also kind of step back or try and, yeah, think about where some of these issues are coming from. I think part of the infuriating thing about listening to some, you know, journalism or media is that it feels like they're all sticking to these key messages and they're all kind of sitting in this surface layer of an argument or just needing to pit one party against each other or pit one side against each other. And it feels like sometimes then you obviously miss what's actually happening underneath or who this issue is actually affecting and all of that. And that's not to say that radio journalists don't try to get to the nuts and bolts of that. They do a lot of the time, and then they, you know, encounter the politics of it all or all of that. So I guess, yeah, I just want to try and get to what's happening underneath as much as possible.
Yeah, that sounds like a really good idea and a good way to deal with the situation. And because this is a spoken word show, I'm wondering if you've got a poem for us that you could read, maybe that touches on some of these themes would be awesome, but if not, that's okay, we can go with it.
I do, yes. I've got one that's fairly recent, as in I wrote it earlier this year and I've been performing it a fair bit because it's still resonating quite a lot with me in terms of where we're at politically, where I'm at personally within all of that, and it's sort of not entirely hopeful, which I don't mean to suggest there's no reason to be hopeful, but it was certainly cathartic to write, and it's usually quite cathartic to perform.
Great. Awesome.
So this is called Crisis Talks. I'm holding crisis talks in my kitchen over Tupperware. They are bursting forth from a packed cupboard, but somehow are all the wrong size. And there's this precarious stack of lids to the side. It's a bold move to keep them separate from their counterpart, but risk is necessary when storing storage. At breakfast time, I butter toast as Trump praises Putin on the radio, the cool, crisp, calm newsreader translating cruelty, idiocy, hypocrisy, and lies into digestible nuggets of news. I slip into another reality where I live underwater and can't hear anything being said above ground. So their voices are just a garbled mess of sounds. It just feels like everything is at crisis point. And my socks have gotten out of control. Each has a hole in the big toe. I just want to stop panicking. I go on the stupid little walks for my stupid mental health, and I've no idea the difference they make, but I feel too nervous to stop now. They are regimented duties, timing and location, sharp in its precision, carefully calculated to sneak in optimal emotional soothing and calorie burning before work. Running through the same motions of emotion on the well-worn paths, I stare up at the same gum. Wish I had more time. Appreciate winding branches and squawking birds. I am lucky to be here. One day I will stop and sit. I breathe in. Be mindful. Take in the moment, the privilege of taking in a moment when a woman's body is being legislated and men keep killing us while others ask if feminism has gone too far. Breathe. One, two, three. They keep saying that Trump is transactional and will only see economic interests. I feel like we say Trump is transactional to rationalize our own behavior because we don't know how to manage the powerful. We only submit to it. It does feel like we are in a crisis. So I put on another Buffy rewatch podcast and nestle into the nostalgia. They actually provide a really interesting contemporary social commentary. I can't stop thinking about how many children are dying in the West Bank, and people are saying it will be the new Gaza, like it's some kind of trend. And I wipe a tear from my eye like a hapless bystander in a superhero movie saying, who will stop this? And a ceasefire breaks like a paper chain they killed a forest to make. I feign disinterest to cope, then passion and fury, exhausted and world-weary and so arrogant to think I know what's going on in the world, so I breathe. 1, 6, 17, and try to appreciate the simple pleasures. Notice they revolve around being in bed. I just want to sleep. I want everyone else to be able to sleep. I wish it were easier to dress myself and that certain tops or skirts or jeans weren't dependent on whether I'm having a skinny day. But you know, no matter what I throw over my skin, I can't help but feel safer for hiding it. I can see that we are having crisis talks, but why is no one talking about Sudan? I mean, I don't know enough, and every ex-politician's podcast is about the future of democracy they didn't try to fix when they had the power. Should I be worrying? Should I be panicking yet? I can still buy eggs, though there is a shortage and some people don't even have clothes. I mean, I want to help so much. I just don't know where to start. And some people say you should start with making your bed, but I just want to lie in it. But I am meandering to a point because I don't want to make it. I don't want to say there isn't hope. I just haven't found much yet. I think we are at crisis point and my landlord is increasing my rent and no one knows what to do. And I don't know how we'll fix the world when people are communicating via podcast and impressions on a post, when trans people are being killed and others are burning books and immigrants are being blamed for everything that's wrong with your life as if they're the reason you can't get a job or a house or a head when actually you can't get up in the morning because life is really hard a lot of the time. Breathe. 1, 18, 53. And look, I don't want to be too fixed in my opinions, but I do think the Kardashians were the turning point for the demise of civilization. I can't explain it completely. It just feels really right. Breathe. I read an article the other day that said, among the deafening noise, we risk becoming complacent. I've been trying to hold it tight like it could save me. I should know better than to put all my eggs in a basket woven with one well-written sentence. but I'll take what I can get. Because I'd rather be in crisis than think any of this is okay.
What's taking place in Palestine is horrendous.
Here are some ways that you can keep yourself informed and involved.
Listen in to Palestine Remembered every Saturday morning at 9:30 a.m. or listen to the podcast.
Join the APAN mailing list at apan.org.au for updates, news about actions you can get involved in, and where you can donate to provide humanitarian assistance.
Listen to other news and current affairs programs on 3CR that also cover Palestine.
The oppression of the Palestinian people has been going on for 75 years. It has to stop. You can be part of making that happen by staying informed and active.
APAN is a proud supporter of 3CR.
You're listening to 3CR Spoken Word Show, 855 on the AM dial. My name is Indrani Pereira, and I'm interviewing poet Hayley Ricketson. Before the break, you heard Hayley with her incredible poem, Crisis Talks, which, as you were listening and you weren't here in the studio with me, you wouldn't know Hayley just recited the whole entire poem without looking at notes, which just has blown my mind completely.
Thank you.
Do you have any tips on how to memorise poetry by any chance?
I think it sounds really ridiculous, but kind of just reading it out over and over again sort of will do the trick for me eventually. One of my lovely fellow poets in the Slammer team, Steph, has always said you can record yourself reading it out and then just listen back to it, which can definitely help. So I've tried that a few times now, and that definitely is a thing. But I do think things like memorizing poems or scripts or words, like it's one of those things where some people just find it a bit easier. So I'm someone who's always kind of remembered lyrics to songs in my head. Like they just stay there once they're there, which sometimes I get worried about the brain space they're taking up. there could probably be other things I'm retaining and not the lyrics to like a Hanson song from the 90s. But yeah, I do also find that once I've, like the first time I'm performing a poem will be sort of the scariest time. That'll be where I'm really testing my memory of it. And then after that, it's like the performance really imprints it in a way, which is funny. So then it's kind of just, usually it's there. It doesn't mean I never have slip-ups. I definitely do. But yeah, for some reason, after the first proper performance of it at an open mic night or something, then it's sort of there.
What do you do when you slip up?
Oh, what do I do? It depends how prepared I am for the slip up. Sometimes I get real lost and I need to just stop and take a minute and try and go back in my brain, because I think I am so used to kind of just letting the words come out that it will throw me if I slip up. But I think that's why I will normally have like my phone or something that I can go to if I need to. Otherwise, you kind of just try and keep going as best you can.
Because here's the thing, right? Even though I don't know how to frame this either, but I'm just thinking we know our poems intimately, so we know when we've made a mistake. But the audience, unless they're a diehard fan who comes to every performance of ours, they don't know if we've made a mistake.
Yeah.
So if you just keep sailing along and just, I don't know, ride those bumps, no one's going to know, are they?
Yeah, very true, very true. And, like, yeah, I should clarify that if it is a small slip-up, like skipping a word or skipping a line, then, yeah, I'll just keep going with it. It's when, like, my brain, you know, can't find the next line and I have to kind of stop and collect myself. Oh, God, where are we up to? But, yeah, it's definitely a good point. It's so easy to get really caught up in, that was supposed to be this word and not that word, and I can't believe I missed that line. But yeah, the audience doesn't know.
Which is a bit liberating.
Definitely.
Yeah.
Good to remember.
You were talking just then about how memorising scripts and song lyrics and all of that has helped you, which made me curious about your playwriting. And I think it's amazing that you've got all of these sort of different strings to your bow. There's, you know, writing poetry and performing poetry with spoken word, and then there's the playwriting. And I'm wondering how those two things, the playwriting and the spoken word performance, sit together. Like, do they influence each other?
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely, they do. I fell in love with playwriting when I was studying performing arts at Monash, and back when I had high hopes of being an actor. I've always written, I've always liked writing, but I did for a time want to be an actor, which I think I just realised I didn't want to after a while. Wasn't really cut out for it either. And I think because the focus of the course was on performance and theatre, I really started to open up and see the potential of live performance and how exciting that was. And so the playwriting side of things is very much sort of, sounds really basic, but the playfulness of it, like either playing with story, playing with language, playing with character, which is all stuff you can kind of do in poetry in a different way. And so playwriting, the plays that I was drawn to, the writing that I was drawn to was usually where there was some kind of playfulness with language or rhythm. So the plays I started to write would have these kind of really deliberate rhythms to the way that people spoke, which is not, you know, I'm not the first playwright to do that by any stretch of the imagination. And I went to London to study playwriting, which was fantastic. And then I hadn't really known that spoken word poetry was a thing before then. And I had a friend, I worked at a cafe, and the barista there, he introduced me to spoken word. I went to an open mic night with him and watched him perform. And it was just really exciting. And after going to a few of them, I went, oh, maybe I can try this as well. And I loved that, you know, people really approach it so differently. And I guess my playwriting and what I love about playwriting fed into poetry in the sense of playing with language, but almost being conversational and always trying to be honest about where something was coming from. So I think I probably end up in some ways, and I guess you can kind of see it in crisis talks, there's almost an element of reciting something from a monologue or like I'm in the middle of a conversation with someone, which... yeah, that's just always what I've been drawn to with my poetry. I love the way other people will approach it differently, or everyone's got their own kind of flavour when they do their poetry. But yeah, that's probably mine.
It sounds like a great flavour. And, you know, it fits neatly in the Tupperware from that poem that you had earlier.
Indeed.
Yes.
Indeed it does.
Yes. I was also curious, and I'm glad you keep bringing up these little things that I'm thinking about asking, which is amazing. You were talking about going to London and meeting a barista, who we have to thank whoever that barista was. Thank you so much. We now have Hayley. It's amazing. Thank you. Thank you. What would you say were the differences between the London and the Melbourne slam scenes and similarities?
Oh, good question. Honestly, I found them quite similar. I mean, it's obviously a similar structure in terms of the slams, and there's such a diversity of people taking the stage. There's a diversity of stories. There's a diversity of style. So that was that feels very similar between both London and Melbourne, I guess. And it's funny to try and sort of recall it all now because it feels like quite a long time ago. But in London, I was always struck. I don't know if this sounds really basic, but they've got such a, like, their accents really influence the type of poetry they do a lot of the time, and you can kind of hit this. They would hit this rhythm a bit more easily, maybe. And I always wondered how my style sat next to them. And that's not to say, like, there were, you know, lots of different people with different accents and different sounds who were taking the stage. I wasn't an anomaly. But I guess because I do have quite a kind of flat Aussie accent and I make a lot of my poetry kind of conversational, I always felt like it probably almost sounded a bit out of place. No one made me feel that way. In any way, but yeah, I was always just kind of their voices can sound so melodic sometimes with that accent, which is really, really nice.
And something that you were sort of a bit envious of?
A little bit. Yeah. A little bit. Yeah.
Cool. Well, given that we've just been talking about performing poetry, I'm wondering if you'd like to share another poem with us, please.
Absolutely. I wonder if I might, now that we've talked about London, maybe I'll share an old poem or my first poem, the first poem I ever performed at an open mic in London or ever, which was, a terrifying experience at the time, but obviously went pretty well. And it's still a poem that resonates with me today. So, yeah, I'll do that one. It's called Sweet. It's the second date. Local pub, large glass of wine, burger with chips and a smile, sitting across from me, sourced from Tinder. Eyes taking it in, kind eyes, and then not kind at all. And the conversation is stilted, sort of like hard to start, and I find myself doing all the work. He smiles across from me, almost nervous, and then just not at all as well. I ask him about his day, his work, his family, and he indulges willingly, an open book not interested in reading another. And he looks at me and says, "You're so sweet." And I smile, "Oh, that's nice, isn't it? It's nice. Sweet," I say. "Oh, everything's, oh." But we persevere. We talk about stuff that's boring, but then we talk about stuff that's not boring, things that are important to me and seem important to him, things to tie to one another, the personal and the political, the emotional, the world around us, the world inside us, and we wrap ourselves around the conversation like this might hold us together longer than I thought. We're on the same page of the same book now. We're looking at each other differently, but then the pause comes, and I just know that I will have to address the pause, because all he does is look at me and says, "You're so sweet." To be clear, to be perfectly, sparklingly clear, I am not sweet. Salty, sour, bitter, intense, but not sweet. Do you know how angry I am sometimes? At the state of the world, at the state of myself, at just fucking nothing, I am not sweet. I am smart. I wouldn't have read every book in a room, but I've read a fair few, and I think about things in a way that pisses me off sometimes, but mostly it's pretty cool to understand some things and to want to know more. "You're so sweet." I am not sweet. I drink coffee and wine, probably too much of both, and I put milk and sugar in that coffee because I am not sweet enough. I like the tart, sour taste of lemon on my lips. I breathe salt and vinegar, balsamic and white wine, and have too much Vegemite on my toast. I am not sweet. I am funny. Sometimes, in a way that's really dry, bone dry, tongue stuck to the roof of your mouth dry, it is not sweet. And if sweet means empathy, then I can be empathetic. I call it being human. I can be there for my friends when they need me and when they don't, and I can feel for people who I've never met and want to help them and sometimes even help them. It's a swelling of collective empathy that I feel like anyone else might feel. So to reduce that to a bag of sugar and pink fairy floss and Disney movie endings doesn't quite add up. I feel a darkness sometimes that takes up room inside me like a shitty flatmate. So we'll fight like mad and then kind of just depend on one another. And it's sad and it's weird and it's frustrating and it's probably normal, but do you know what it's not? It's not sweet. All of that that squeezes into and out of me, I don't think it fits in a pot of honey. I'm calling bullshit. Because it would seem, at the end of the day, at the end of the night, at the end of the glass of wine, I'm not all that. Not all that to you. I'm just a body you hoped would taste as sweet as it looked. I'd apologize if I were sorry. I'm just not that sweet.
Thank you for that amazing poem. You just heard Hayley Ricketson with her poem Sweet, that was unpacking all the ways that she's not sweet. I did like that line when you were talking about how you'd been reduced to fairy floss.
That
was really good. And yeah, I'm really sad to say that we've come to the end of the show already.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. Thank you so much for coming along today.
Oh, my pleasure. Thank you so much for having me.
Yeah, it was wonderful. I just wish we had more time because I want to hear more poems.
Next time.
Yes, absolutely. Thank you for listening to 3CR Spoken Word Show. I'm Indrani Pereira, and you've been listening to poet Hayley Ricketson. And thank you to the listeners for tuning in. If you enjoyed hearing this episode, you can play it over again on our podcast page, where you also find our extensive archive of spoken word. Head on over to www.3cr.org.au/spokenword to get lost in a sea of words. And remember to tune in to Spoken Word every Thursday at 9 a.m. here on 3CR for more spoken word goodness.